Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Craig Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. Jim, we start with the good, and it comes to us from a 60 Minutes piece. Scott Pelley speaking with former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta about a couple of different things, namely how the administration handled the drawdown from Iraq, as well as the earlier days of the civil war inside Syria. Of course, we know that the U.S. and the Iraqi government failed to come to an agreement on a status of forces agreement that would have left a residual force there. And here's how that part of the conversation went between Pelley and Panetta.
Back when you watched the Stars and Stripes being lowered for the last time in Baghdad, were you confident in that moment that pulling out was the right thing to do?
No, I wasn't. I really thought that it was important for us to maintain a presence in Iraq.
And he later said about 8 to 10,000 troops, as well as some specialists. Then, in the early days of the Syrian civil war, it turns out that Panetta, along with Hillary Clinton and several others in the national security team, wanted to arm moderate Syrian rebels. That's not what happened, though.
But with virtually his entire national security team unanimous on this, that's not the decision the president made.
I think the president's concern, and I understand it, was that he had a fear that if we started providing weapons, we wouldn't know where those weapons would wind up. My view was you have to begin somewhere.
Jim, the second one was certainly a topic of much more heated debate among the right than whether we should have a residual force in Iraq. But the fact that folks like Panetta are coming out and saying this now not only proves that a lot of what conservatives were saying on this at the time is correct, but there's now at least some transparency and honesty coming from inside that inner circle.
Panetta's been one of those guys since the beginning of this administration who initially seemed too old and tired old guard when he was running the CIA out at Langley and then at the Pentagon, and has actually been a pretty straight shooter and somebody we on the right could kind of say, all right, he's a grown-up, he takes these sorts of issues seriously. And I think it's kind of important. I'm going to name drop a bit here, Greg. So I had a chance to chat with Brit Hume when I was over at Fox News a little while back. This is right before Obama's big speech on September 10th, and we talked about it, and Brit Hume and his perfectly dry style says, tonight President Obama is going to announce that ISIS emerged from the ground spontaneously, much like Godzilla. And it's much better when you hear Brit Hume himself saying it in his anchor voice. That kind of is this, mentality of like, well, when something bad happens, it's really important the American people feel like, well, there's nothing we could have done. It just came out of nowhere like a meteor, and its effect is no, it's not. This is, the rise of ISIS is at least partially a consequence of U.S. policy decisions. And it's not to say that there's a perfect policy out there that would have ensured that no group of ISIS ever would have arisen. But certainly our, full withdrawal from Iraq left Iraq in a more vulnerable position than it otherwise would have been and kind of gave them some opportunities. And then secondly, our decision to not get involved in Syria, concluding that there was no good guys in that fight, there was nobody we trusted to arm, which, is not the most illegitimate perspective in the world. But the result is that, when you decide to stay out of a fight between two bad guys, one of the possible consequences is that one of those two bad guys will come out stronger. And ironically, we've ended up in a situation where I haven't heard anybody really talk about Assad getting deposed anytime soon. But we also have large chunks of Syria and Western Iraq controlled by ISIS. So in a way, we've kind of gotten the worst of both worlds in that Assad is still in power. I don't think you can say that there's really been a serious consequence of him using those chemical weapons. Lo and behold, he hasn't given up all of his chemical weapons, and he continues to use chlorine because chlorine is a dual-use chemical, and he didn't have to use that. He didn't have to give that up to the inspectors. Coupled with the fact that ISIS now has more control over more territory than ever. And so we've ended up with a perfectly bad situation. And I think any serious evaluation of what to do next is going to say, all right, what decisions have we made so far that have led us to this point? Panetta is kind of pointing out, look, we can say, there's nothing we could have done differently. But in fact, there is something we could have done differently. And if we want different results, we may have to pursue a different policy.
On to the bad martini. It's kind of related, given the threat posed, or at least threatened by ISIS at this point. And this does not give us great reassurance here. This is from the Washington Post from Sunday. An exodus of top-level officials from the Department of Homeland Security is undercutting the agency's ability to stay ahead of a range of emerging threats, including potential terrorist strikes and cyber attacks, according to interviews with current and former officials. The departures are a result of what employees widely describe as a dysfunctional work environment, abysmal morale, and the lure of private security companies paying top dollar that have proliferated in Washington since 9/11. They talk about how they've gone through six different heads of the U.S. Customs and Border Enforcement Office. The department's terrorism intelligence arm has cycled through six different directors, and they're way behind schedule on cybersecurity measures. So, Jim, between ISIS and the border crossings from earlier this summer, good to know that those in charge of keeping us safe have their eyes on the ball.
One of the things that kind of jumps out about this, you know, having just written the book on government bureaucracy and why it works the way it does and the way it doesn't work the way it doesn't work, there's a school of thought amongst some liberals, progressives, I think the ones who are least familiar with the way government operates, that, well, Republicans can't manage government efficiently or well because they hate government. But Democrats love government. As a result of that, Democrats will give you better management, better competence, more accountability, and all that stuff. And I think it's very much the opposite. I think that, you know, can you point to examples of incompetence under Republican management of the Bush years? Yeah, sure, it happens. Indisputably, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. You know, the examples pile up there. But I don't think there's anyone to dispute. We have an administration that loves government right now. And you get things like the VA and healthcare.gov not working and the IRS. And, you know, the examples there keep piling up and up. If the all-stick approach of the Republicans, by the way, I don't think Republicans really do have that all-carrot approach. I think this is some of this is endemic to the civil service. I think some of this comes to a culture of complacency. If people were immediately executed after screw-ups, you would have fewer screw-ups. I'm not calling for the execution of federal workers. I'm just kind of observing that, you know, when there's a minimal consequence for making a serious mistake, nobody particularly worries about making those mistakes. And that's how these mistakes and this kind of culture of complacency proliferates. DHS, now the theory I had for much of the writing of this book was that, well, it's really a mess at HHS, it's really a mess at labor, commerce, at large chunks of the bureaucracy, but generally, you know, the FBI is pretty good at arresting criminals, the military is good at blowing stuff up. If the consequences of failure are life and death, you do get a little bit more competence there. People are a little bit more on the ball because they realize that the consequence is there. Maybe not so much. The VA certainly challenges that. The smallpox that was left in the closet by the CDC is kind of unnerving about that. Or it might have been HHS. This is the DHS. Again, it's kind of surprising because it can't be an issue of funding. It can't be an issue, you know, be very curious about why people so quickly want to leave this department and why we're kind of rotating a revolving door of leadership there. Look, DHS, if you can understand DHS comes under a lot of criticism, but you know what, guys, like this is your responsibility. This is your job. And you're going to get criticized if you don't get stuff done and you have problems like the border. So I don't quite understand why the DHS are suddenly now the attitude to be the life of DHS is so much harder than it was, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, or 8 years ago.
If that wasn't depressing enough, let's go to the crazy martini now. And Lois Lerner has given her first interview since pleading the fifth. She gave it to Politico. It's a pretty lengthy story. And in some ways, Jim, the term schizophrenic comes to mind because in some ways she's extremely defiant. Other times she's completely charming. But here's my favorite sequence. Here's three different passages from the story. This is quoting Lerner, the first couple. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm proud of my career and the job I did for this country. Regardless of whatever else happens, I know I did the best I could under the circumstances, and I'm not sorry for anything I did. Then it says, she's a savvy lawyer. She studiously avoided answering fundamental questions about her role in the IRS scandal that could land her in deeper trouble with Congress. So clearly she did nothing wrong.
When you insist upon pleading the fifth, well, and if you really did nothing wrong, then why not answer the questions? Yes, you have the constitutional right to plead the fifth, but the problem is that once you do that, other people are free to conclude why you won't answer the questions. And as much as you may insist that you did nothing wrong, well, here's a good way to help, you know, help clear your name, answer some questions. I just want to observe, Greg, have you interacted with Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air?
Briefly, yes.
Okay, he's just like just about the nicest guy on the internet.
Right.
And he stands out because of that. And not one prone to hyperbolic rhetoric and things like that. He's not Michael Savage, so we say, right?
No, not at all.
Okay, here's his assessment after discussing one of the points Lerner makes about pleading the fifth. Quote, "The rest of this piece is sheer drivel and perhaps the most monumental effort ever made in print to deliberately miss the point." When you're on Ed Morrissey's last nerve, that's a sign, the kind of shamelessness and outrageousness of what we're seeing from Lerner and her backers in a piece like this.
Good job there. Heck of a
start to the week, everybody.
All right, one housekeeping note for the week. Tomorrow's a three martini lunch. If both Jim and I seem groggy and one of us seems particularly irritated, you know it's because the Bears and the Jets play tonight on Monday Night Football. So guaranteed we'll be up past our bedtimes and one of us will not be happy with the outcome. Correct?
Yes. It's going to be even more than usual phoned in, shall we say. we do this by phone. Yeah. But, you know, that might make it more fun. Tune in tomorrow to see which one of us is snapping. Those are stupid topics, Greg. I don't want to talk about those. There's no defense for that topic selection, just like the Jets have no defense on third down.
Oh, it's already good times. Jim, have a good night, but not too good. And I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.